Coach, defense is important, but a team also has to score to win. You can have the best defense in the world, but without an offense to match, you won't be winning any championships. Just have a look at what happened during March Madness this year. Three out of four teams that made it to the Final Four on both the women's and men's side were the top three offensive-ranked teams. That's no coincidence. The reality is most coaches will win more games with a 15% improvement on offense. But how? We're bringing in one of the greatest offensive minds in the game and Read and React creator, Coach Rick Torbett, to help answer that question. On May 9th, Rick and I will kick off our four-week offensive strategies track where we will teach coaches how to score 7 to 10 more points per game. Just head to pgccoaching.com/tracks to learn more.
Welcome to the Harwood Hustle, powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. Iowa women's basketball just made another run to the national championship game. And did you know they run the Read and React offense? This week, Rick Torbett from Better Basketball joins TJ and Sam to discuss what makes for good offense and how Iowa's system has set Caitlin Clark and her teammates up for success. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. Sam and I have got our good friend Rick Torbett on today. As tournament time is around, we're watching the Iowa women make another great run. And we thought we'd bring Rick on for this reason. Many people may not know this, but the Iowa women's team has been running Read and React stuff since about 2009 or 10. Is that right, Rick?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember going to a clinic. I think we were at Coe College and the whole staff was there and you'd been working with them on Read and React for a long time. And, you know, they run a lot of Read and React. They run some sets where you see Read and React themes throughout as well. They have a lot of freedom to play. I was thinking about one of the quotes, Lisa Bluter, the head coach at Iowa, says, "I've enjoyed learning about the Read and React offense and incorporating it into my offensive system. Read and React teaches players how to play the game instead of making robotic actions that are predetermined. It's a fun offense. It allows players to showcase their abilities." And I would say Caitlin Clark is a great recipient of that, right? I mean, she's getting the opportunity to showcase what she can do. And so, yeah, we're going to dive into that a little bit. Rick, where have you seen the Read and React offense? I know you've spent a lot of time. You just recently got back from being up there at Iowa at practice in a game here within the last month or so. What are some ways that you've seen them benefit from running the offense?
Great question. And it was something that we discussed while I was there. It has, since 2009, they've been running it, okay? And it has permeated their DNA. That's the best way I can say that. In other words, it shows up in almost everything they do, especially in their passing, their spacing. Well, I mentioned sharing the ball, movement without the ball. It shows up in their transition. To me, it has answered. Iowa has answered the two biggest questions I've received. First of all, a few years ago, Gustafson, I mess up her last name every time. All-American post player, right? And one of the questions I've always got is, will the Read and React accommodate a great post player? Well, you know, 4 years, All-American, great post player, okay? And now this year, last 4 years, Caitlin Clark has answered the other question. You know, what if you have a great player? Would you still be running the Read and React? And it's almost a silly question to me. It's like, hey, it's who it was made for. You want to turn her loose and take advantage of her creativity. You want to recruit her creativity and give her the ability to take whatever the defense gives. And that's what Iowa's done.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Rick holds me to a different standard, I think, with Read and React, so he's often disappointed in me and our team. But the reality is that, you know, I think it's a great way of describing it with Iowa, even with our team. It's just in our DNA. There's so many things that we do, like how many big backdoor buckets we've gotten, how many times we've burnt the corner to get a layup, how many times we've gotten a safety valve three in a crucial moment, you know, all of those different things. Now, I think over time, you know, there's occasions where we've, you know, we've run sets or whatever, but incorporated the different read and react actions that we work on a daily basis based on a player we may have or a player that we don't have, or, you know, and that's the unique thing about read and react. If you've got two post players, it can look one way. And if you've got no post players, it can look another way. And people wouldn't even know you were running the same offense, but you are, because there's so much flexibility in it. And Iowa's done a great job. A great example, if you followed them over the years, when they had a dominant post player, the read and react looked one way. And when they have a dominant guard, it looked another way, but still running many of the same stuff, same actions, which is just really good basketball. And it's been fun. And I think the read and react has allowed them a framework to give Caitlin Clark a lot of freedom to go play.
Yeah, I'm amazed that, let's see, 2009 until now, how many years is that? 14 years, something like that. I don't know, 15 years?
Yeah.
That commentators have not picked up on it. You know, read and react is still, I think, one of the best well-kept secrets in the basketball community.
Rick, let me ask you this. So if you're watching them play, and I think sometimes, you know, I think sometimes people look at particular offense, like Caitlin Clark has a lot of freedom. Something like Steph Curry has a lot of freedom. You know, I gave my player KJ a lot of freedom. And I think there is some goodness in allowing players to have that freedom, even though there's going to be a lot of frustrating plays. Like when I was watching them in their Elite Eight game just against LSU, there was times when you're like, oh my gosh. And then there's times like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? You know, like you could get a better shot than that. And I think, but you know, that goes back to coaching and allowing those. Here's my question for you. In the read and react, there's so many different layers, so many different options to being able to run it. And I do think, you know, circle movement is kind of, that's our base offense. I mean, circle movement, I think everybody's kind of got to do that to be able to have a way to react to the ball when it's dribbled, right? Going a little bit deeper than that. And then where do I go when the ball gets passed? And those are two of the things that the read and react answers. Every player knows where to go when the ball is dribbled or the ball is passed. Beyond that, what do you think, if you had to just pick a couple of your favorite things or actions or things you'd incorporate into it, or you've seen Iowa incorporate, or you've seen us incorporate, that are just your favorite actions that you think lend to a team having successful, good ball movement, good action?
It's so easy to answer, is anyone, but especially your great player, cut to the basket. Okay. Try to score after you've given up the ball, or you're one pass away and you're denied. Great players are going to be denied. So we know that if they're over the three-point line, they're going to cut, right? But it's that next best action. How about stopping in the post, okay, and waiting for the ball to move and then back screening the passer? I just love that action, because you wind up being involved in the very next action, setting up a teammate for a potential layup, but also giving yourself the ability to shape up after a screen for either a three or a rip and go, maybe even, depending on your formation, an ISO. When you do that, many times you've cleared out one side, and you can just catch, rip, and go. It is absolutely my favorite action.
Rick, you told us earlier before we pressed record about just you spent some time with them a few weeks ago. And share with the audience a little bit of what you saw and some nuggets for some coaches that are listening on what you saw and maybe what they could apply within their own practices and development.
Okay. And you know something, Sam? Great question, by the way. And it is, and this could be applied to any level. Okay. There was a time in practice where they went to a game that was three versus three. And the emphasis was pass, cut, dribble at, drive, circle movement, right? Natural pitch or safety valve. And they played it live, and they're just rotating groups of three in, and they're giving extra points for scoring with certain actions. But they were it was such great basketball. But it's, as you well know, those are basics. Those are in the first four layers of the read and react. right? And they probably played it for 20 minutes, I would say, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and just building players. And I think that's what, you know, the Read and React, which is so unique and so, you know, interesting and also so good for the game, is that develop players. And, you know, Jenny Fitzgerald, one of their coaches, the Read and React is an offense system that can be implemented at any level, and it teaches players how to play the game, makes reads, and in turn becomes hard for players not to become better, is what she said about the offense. And I just think that's so true. And you see them playing that out in the 3-on-3 drill where they're learning to make those plays. And I thought it showed up really well and has showed up well over the tournament. One of my favorite particular things that I've seen happen is when they've really pressed Caitlin Clark and some people come to help, she's done a great job of hitting back doors where they're burning on the backside. And so it's been a relief, and they've been able to make people pay for overplaying the best player. They had two or three beautiful back doors early against LSU last night that I think softened up the defense a lot and made them think about their decisions, because those players just instinctively knew how to make that play. It was within their offense and they'd been working on it. And you could tell like a drill like that actually translated to game, which is so important that it does translate. What are some ways that you think the Read and React, when translated well, what are signs that it's happening and it's working well?
Is, you know, on dribble penetration, the penetrator's head is up and the receivers are expecting it. They're eager receivers, especially their post players. And you can just tell they've done this time and time and time again, okay? And they will either dish it to the post or they'll pitch it to the perimeter. So it's not an emergency, okay, I've driven the ball into the paint, I can't finish, oh gosh, I'm desperate to get rid of it somewhere. No, that's not the case at all. They're playing at that next best action level. They know what to look, who to look for, where the passing windows are, who's going to have their back, who's in their natural pitch. To me, that's a sure sign that it has crept into your DNA.
Let me ask this question to both Rick, you and TJ. So when you have you here, let me. It's a two-parter. Let me play the contrarian. The contrarian coach listening and saying, oh, Rick, great, great offense. Well, if I had Caitlin Clark, Read and React would be great too. Or TJ has KJ Jones, the leading scorer in the country at Division II level. Or Phil Jack, yeah, the triangle offense worked great with Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. Let's acknowledge something. Good players make good offenses look good. You need good players to make any offense look good. One of the beauties of the Read and React is it does develop players' skill set and IQ. But here, let me get to the question, which is any offense, when you have a great player like Caitlin Clark or a KJ, you do have to adapt and morph it to that player. While also trying to fit it into a bigger system. I think it's both a blessing and a curse, to be honest. But I'd love to hear both of y'all kind of just speak into that a little bit.
Go ahead, TJ.
Yeah, you know, interesting question, Sam, because I think sometimes some stars can actually make the offense look worse, but it also gives them the freedom. You have an offense, they have the freedom to do that. Let's just say that you run flex and they come off every screen and they double them. And there's no freedom for that great player to be great. And that's what I think one of the things that Read and React does, it allows a great player to be great. Even though they break the offense, sometimes they're going to have a lot of touches within the offense and they're going to get those extra 4 to 6 points within the offense. And so, you know, you could argue both ways, like, yeah, the star makes the player, but some of the best Read and React teams I've seen ever run it didn't have a star, you know what I mean? And it sometimes I found it even easier to I found it successful both ways, to have a star and run it, which gives them the freedom to do it, And also when there is no star, everybody has to work together to run those actions where you the offense actually has to create it for itself. You know, Caitlin Clark can create some own offense. KJ Jones can create some of their own offense. But what happens when that breaks down? What do you rely on? What are you going to go to? Or what happens when you don't have one of those players? What are you going to do? And I think that's the real testament. And, you know, I think, you know, to answer that question also, Sam, look, you've coached every level of basketball, right? And you're running it with your eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th grade travel teams, right? I'm running it with a Division II college team. We're talking about Iowa running it with a Division I women's team. You know, and we've seen this at every level. I'm actually, we've got a WNBA team coming up next week that wants to dive deeper into the read and react. You know what I mean? So that's pro level down to all the way to youth level, which is a testament to the offense. And it's definitely going to look different when you have a star like KJ Jones or Caitlin Clark or whatever. It's definitely going to look different, but it gives them the freedom and gives you the reins as a coach to say, yeah, you can have all this rope or you can't have all that rope. And that's going to be a coach's decision. But either way, it can work where there's a lot of offenses where it can't work to have a star.
Right. And I hear that argument, Sam, in so many different forms, you know. I've had coaches say, yeah, I've run the read and react, you know, when I didn't have talent, but now I've got some talent, we're going to run some sets. It's like, okay, you're crazy, you know, but, you know, it's like I sing you this song and you won't respond. I sing you a different kind of song and you won't respond. Let me tell you what I think the read and react does for someone like Caitlin Clark and KJ. Is that, first of all, they're great with the ball. That's what makes them great. You stick the ball in their hand, and you're right, TJ. They can create their own offense for everybody and their own shot. What the read and react does for them is it teaches them that there is another side to this game, and it's that time when they don't have the ball. I mean, what makes Steph Curry so great? Oh, yeah, okay, besides his three-point shooting range, okay? It's his movement without the ball, his ability to play off screens and reads and, okay, without the ball. So if you've got a great player like Caitlin Clark, my push would be, look, we already know you're great with the ball. That's a given. I want another 8 to 10 points from you from actions off the ball, which the read and react teaches. Filling an empty spot, the read line, cutting the basket, your next best action after that. Are you going to scream for a post? Are you going to scream for a perimeter player? How about pin screens? Ba-da-ba, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a great point right there, Sam, to build on that is, look, KJ Jones doesn't need me to help him get 18 points a game, right? Like, my job is to help him to get to 26. Like, those finding the extra 6 or 8. And I think that if you go watch him over time, you know, if we just set a high ball screen, he's going to get his 18, right? But the what people don't see is like when he set back screens, what it created for other people. What people don't see is how important that back door being overplayed was. You know, when KJ was at his best and he was getting 30, it was because he was active off the ball. He was probably going to get 18 to 20 without being active off the ball and doing all the other stuff. But when he had his best games and when our offense was the best and when our team was the best is when he was doing all that other stuff that took us to a whole nother level. And, you know, I saw that last night in the LSU and Iowa game is, you know, look, she made some tough shots. She also, if we're just being real honest, she took some bad shots that got him in trouble sometimes, right? Like, it did both. What was really stood out to me was some of the pressure release buckets they got. Even some of their post slides when she would drive and they were funneling her to one side and they decided and the post slid opposite and she would get a clean layup because they weren't leaving the post. Like, there was little things like that the average basketball person wouldn't notice. But when you've actually been in it and you realize, wow, post slides really do create a space or drop off opportunities. Oh, wow, a back screen from a great player creates this that might be 2 or 3 actions down the road. That's what people aren't recognizing, where you can see those little intricate pieces fall into line, which you sometimes have to fight with a star. You know, you have to sell them. You have to make a pitch that you back screening really will help the team, or you cutting hard really will help the team. But when you can get them to do what they do and make the rest of the players better by incorporating those things, then you got a chance to have a special team, I think.
I do want to mention that the sets that you see at the highest levels, you will probably run a set or two or three to create an early advantage from which you flow. If it doesn't work, you flow into the read and react, okay? I would not be doing that with, say, a youth team running the read and react. Now, what I will do is I might construct an entry for a youth team, something that looks like you might look at it and say, well, gosh, that's a set play. No, I'm trying to train this team to enter their offense, the read and react, in different ways. There's a big difference between that and the sets that you run, TJ, on the front end of it. Whether it's just a simple high ball screen, fine. Look, ball screens are ball screens. Does it work? Does it not? Well, but it gets the defense moving, helping, hedging, rotating early, and then the read and react habits can take advantage. That's how I would like viewers to see their sets. Look for what is run behind it if it doesn't work, because they work or don't work at about the same percentage for any other team.
Yeah, and Sam, I know you got a question. I'll just add one thing to that. Even the actions within the set plays, like if we train safety valves a lot, right, on the drive, burning the corner, right, like a back door from the corner spot. Well, even on the high ball screen, one of the things that makes it really successful is the timing of reacting to the drive when it's coming at you from that corner and burning it. Or let's say it's a high screen and roll, the safety valve really lifting up all high from the backside to get to their three. So there are things that you train every single day that even when you run a high ball screen, there are actions that you want to come out in that play that are read and react actions. So I would say even, Rick, yeah, what are you going to flow into is really important, because I think at some point, like during the NCAA tournament, something like maybe, I can't remember what it was, 16%, maybe this is 2022, 16% of plays actually ended in a bucket. That means like 84% of set plays didn't even end in a bucket. Like, so, I mean, that's a huge percentage. So what you run after is obviously really important. Sam, go ahead with your question. I know you're waiting. Thanks for that.
Well, no, good. First off, if you're listening, this isn't a read and react infomercial. We don't have anything to sell you at the end. We are all three believers in what the read and react produces and the good offense. So I think, DJ, one thing, like, for those that are familiar, but those that aren't, like, safety valve, let's just educate. Like, what is that? That's when you drive and you pull behind and you hit the perimeter player pulling behind the driving action. And so it's a simple yet underrated action that's hard to guard. You know, and also, Rick, like Golden State Warriors in 2015 started making the split action very popular. Now, you still don't see, surprisingly, you didn't see a ton of copycat from it. I'm surprised you don't see more of it. Well, you call it the X cut within the read and react. So you've borrowed and stolen different actions from all over the world and then just formed it into a more cohesive system for coaches. That's the beauty. That's the genius. That's the simplicity behind what you've created. And it's morphed over the years. And I've got a lot of questions. Let me throw this one to you, both of you. What's your favorite couple of actions within the read and react?
You know, Sam, I would start with this. It's going to be a pretty bland answer, but there's many a times when I overcoach. And so, like, I start tweaking this and tweaking that, like, doing it. And then one of my favorite things to say at halftime is, like, hey, forget all that. Let's just go out there and cut them up. And this is like, let's just get moving. You know what I mean? Or, you know, or something as simple as the circle movement where it's like, hey, listen, let's just circle move till we get to the foul line or get a shot. Because one of two things happens a lot. We're not putting enough pressure on the rim with our drives, right? Like we're not putting, so our circle move is not going, or the ball is stagnant. And we're not moving. So when it goes back to it, there's a lot of like, I love pin screens against the zone. Like there's a whole bunch of things that I can, I love to back screen a shooter out of the middle. Like a lot of people you see run Princeton stuff. Well, you can get that out of read and react real easy. We just put our best shooter in the top and we're back screening off that. And it looks a lot like Princeton stuff just by making that one adjustment. I like that action a lot. But oftentimes when it comes down to it, I would just like us to circle move harder. I mean, put more pressure on the team right there. And there's a lot of times when I would just like us to cut harder so that we're just getting more movement and better gaps to be able to attack. And so there's all, you know, why there's so many different things you can, it can go to. I find myself oftentimes in the final 10 minutes of a game or at halftime saying, sorry about overcoaching. I may not say that to the team, but I've been doing that. We've been trying to do this, this, and this. Let's just get back to being really good at circle movement or really good at passing and cutting and putting pressure back on the team. So I default to those being my favorite, even though they're most simple.
TJ, explain real quickly circle movement because we keep referencing that.
Yeah. My 6-year-old son had soccer practice the other day, and like the coach made a great point. He said, at the end of the season, if we can just not get them to all go to the ball together, right, in same place, it will be a win for us, right? But I would say that even happens in college basketball games where I see there's just no spacing. There's no, you know, there. And why is it? Because they're guessing on what to do. Circle movement is just a unified way of getting everybody to oversimplify, to push and pull. You know, like if the ball goes one direction, I push away from it. If it comes, it goes away from me, I pull behind it. But what it does is it unifies all five players to be able to have great spacing on the floor. We know that in basketball, poor spacing leads to poor offense. And we oftentimes get poor spacing when people start dribbling the ball, because one person runs away from it, one person runs to it, one person goes to post up, but circle movement tells everybody on the court when the ball is driven from this particular spot, here's what you do. So it keeps our spacing together. We're all five of us are on a rope. We know where to go. We know what to do to create the most space, which in turn puts the most pressure on the defense when everybody's unified and spaced out well. And so, you know, pushing and pulling from the ball, a five-player system to how to react to the dribble, which is really simple, but it creates stuff that is just good basketball that create, you know, whether it's good spacing, whether it's good post-relocation, which creates offensive opportunities. And the thing, last thing I'll say about it is it oftentimes creates less turnovers because your players are driving into better space rather than somebody not knowing what to do and they just run to the ball. And then all of a sudden, I didn't know you were doing this. Well, I didn't know you were doing that. And then all of a sudden you create more turnovers. Rick, does that – you're the master. You answer. I don't know why you asked me, but go ahead.
No, that was excellent. No, it was excellent. A unified way to maintain your spacing and for the penetrator to know – exactly where all his teammates will be when they drive. You know, it was excellent. To answer Sam's question about favorite actions, it's really hard for me because I get excited when I see any read and react action. But yeah, I'll tell you what, I get excited when I see Iowa feed the post anywhere, high post, mid post, short corner. I get excited when I see that, and I'll tell you why. They may have been, you know, a little uncoordinated maybe, okay? Things are busted up. But it seems like when they feed the post, they fall back into the read and react. They become organized. It's a good way for them to become organized, okay? Because there's someone either doing the split action, okay, or – they're cutting to the basket, which we call a Laker cut. And that means the other players on the perimeter are filling spots. There's movement along the perimeter. The post player has options, you know. Instead of being forced to go one-on-one, they've got all four teammates they could pass to, someone cutting the rim they can pass to. And you know something, if no help comes, I can see the real estate where I could make a post move. It seems to be a great way to reorganize, I guess, when I see them feed the post. They do it pretty much automatically.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think also, Rick, about this, well, you made a good point, which is the read and react does allow you to run a set and then flow into the offense seamlessly, and your opponent doesn't even know what's happening, really. I don't know, TJ, I don't know if y'all still do FAFSA at the college level. I think y'all do. That's what I think of when I think of read and react, the FAFSA form, the financial aid form. That here's the FAFSA acronym I like. Rick, you can use this later maybe, but it gives you flexibility. It gives you – you can – adaptability. You can adapt within a possession, within a game, within a season. It gives you different formations. You can run out of a five-out, four-out, three-out, high post, low post. Gives you freedom. It's hard to scout. And then you can advance it as you go. You know, you can layer it up. That's why I like – I think that's what attracts somebody like a Lisa Booter to it, like a TJ Rosine. It attracts coaches because of all those reasons. So it's just, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And it is, this is ironic too. Is this year 20, is this the 20th anniversary or the 25th anniversary since you created it? Sorry.
Let's see. Since I created it was 03, 04. But I made it public in 08.
Well, we're creating 03, 04. No, we're 08.
Yeah, it's 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah, 20. So don't have a question for either one of y'all, but just wanted to point that out to the listeners.
Well, I think, Sam, one of the things that you alluded to there that I think is really important is most coaches I come across either lean towards wanting to have a lot of freedom, you know, like to just play, or a lot of control. And I think there's danger on both ends of it, right? Like if you just total freedom, roll the balls out there and play, you're not going to have enough structure to be a successful team, right? And the flip side of that is if you got all these players that need to be able to make decisions and make reads, you can't control everything. And one of the unique things I think about when I think about the read and react is it's when you hand it over to a player, a coach that really loves freedom, it can look one way. When you hand it over to another coach that really loves to dominate the action and be in complete control, it could look a whole nother way. But either way, I think we need checks and balances. And I think read and react does allow that. It checks and balances to, let's just say you want no structure. Well, here's a bit of structure to go. When the ball does get passed, what do I do? When the ball gets dribbled, what do I do? And I think most people at base need to know that to be able to guide their team, right? And then the flip side of it is when you have a coach that really loves control, it gives you the opportunity to dive into all of the layers of the offense and pick where you want control and where you really want to actually run those actions. And in left to our own devices, like I've seen some coaches that are like brilliant, but had no structure and it was a mess to the players, right? Or some players that were like had good players, but all they had was structure. And so then it became one play leading to another play. And by the end of the year, they have 172 plays and the whole team is bogged down, right? Both are dangerous, you know, and I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with set plays plus an offense to flow into. There's nothing wrong with however you decide to do it. You just have to be aware that there's dangers on both ends. And finding the right mix for each team. How much does this team need me to control them versus let them go? At the end of the year, my goal is my team doesn't need me nearly as much because I need to call less plays. And there are times when I felt late in the season, gosh, they still need a lot of help, right? But my goal is for them to need as little help as possible, which is, I think, a cool thing about the read and react, that it allows both the coach that high on control and the one that's high on freedom, it offers a solution to both of them, which I think is pretty neat.
You know, and that just fascinates me, the coaches that are out there running into them. I want to give you a great example of this. In Arkansas, I ran into a coach, Brad Johnson, okay? And I met him the previous year, and I asked him, well, hey, how'd this season go, you know? You know, good. Of course, you know, good, right. That doesn't tell me anything, you know. And he said, yeah, we were 39-1, and we won the state championship, you know. He's a veteran read and react coach, good grief, 10, 12 years, okay. And I said, and he said, also, his team was voted the best team in all classifications by the coaches in Arkansas. And I said, so what's the secret? What, you know, give me your secret sauce. What's the, and he said, my secret is my 7th, 8th, and 9th grade teams. Really? Yeah. We're all in this together. The coaches, the players, we all run the reading rack. We all have the same language, same terminology. We stand on each other's shoulders. And my 7th through the 9th grade teams were 59-0. So his whole program this year, I think it's 98-1.
I think that's what a lot of great high school programs do, right? They're not just concerned about that team, unless you're more like a college high school team where they're getting recruits in every year. But the ones that withstand the test of time, they're building and they're developing over the long term, which is another benefit of RE-REC. You just keep stacking up each year and getting better at it. I can see Brad doing that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, listen, we've been talking about all the tournament games, and we just happened to be in a conversation with Rick, and we were talking about what was going on, and we knew that he just got back from Iowa, a visit down there. And so we were like, man, gosh, maybe we should just talk online about this. And obviously, Sam, Rick, and I all love the read and react. We know there's a lot of great ways to run offense and a lot of great ways to do things, but this is one that's kind of withstood the test of time for us, both in talking to pro coaches and running it at the college level, at doing it with developmental programs and travel ball teams. We've just had a lot of fun coaching the Read and React, and we've had a lot of success coaching the Read and React. So we thought it'd be just timely to bring Rick on while I was making this run, as he would be probably too humble to admit that oftentimes. But I remember back probably 10, 12, 15 years ago, sitting in a small college gym where the Iowa staff came to see you, Rick, and to learn the offense. Testament to you, and testament to you that's withstood the test of time. So thanks for joining us today, Rick.
Thank you. And by the way, I do want to make a shout out to Lisa Bluter and Jan Jensen and Jenny Fitzgerald and Abby. It's such a class act. They treated myself and my wife Cindy was like we were royalty. And I wish you could be there to hear how they talk to their players in practice. It's just the culture is just, it's excellent.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And you can see it in there and even their press conferences, right? And they're easy to pull for, you know, class act, running a really good program. And oftentimes good people find good people like you find in their staff and them finding you, Rick. So salute to you for that. Hey, coaches, if you want to find out more, check it out at betterbasketball.com. You learn more about the Read and React offense. I think you'd just really be anywhere else that we should send them to, Rick?
No. That's it. PGC Coaching has Read and React 2.0 as well, right?
PGC Coaching. What's your social handle where they can follow you at?
Rick Torbett at Twitter, I think. Goodness gracious. I don't even know my own.
Rick, this is Rick Torbett at Twitter.
Sorry.
It's not even Rick Twitter Torbett anymore, Rick. It's called X now. Try any of those combinations, coaches. But YouTube channel's got some good stuff on it too as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got Better Basketball YouTube channel. They got lots of videos with game clips. Better Basketball X, you know, Better Basketball Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Join any of those. Well, hey, Rick, thanks again for joining us. Hey, he is Sam. I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of The Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. We also want to make sure you know about our coaching resources and freebies available to you at pgchustle.com. We have a workshop, a Read and React masterclass, and effective practice planning tips to help you enhance your coaching. Get started at pgchustle.com. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.